the stories of how they survived.
Welcome to The Awakening. This podcast is about telling the truth. Truth about what happens when religion harms, and truth about the courage it takes to heal. We'll be speaking with survivors who are reclaiming their voices and their lives. If you've ever felt silenced, shamed, or unseen in the name of faith, this space is for you. You are not alone. Welcome back, everyone, to the third episode of The Awakening. I'm your host, Heather Foy.
And I'm your co-host, Tamara Buchanan.
We are so excited to be back with you guys once again. And today we have an incredible guest with us. Her name is Mary Byler, but she goes by Fee. She is the founder of the Misfit Amish, and she also wrote a few books. One of them is called The Amish Misfit, but I'm going to let her tell you the rest about her books. Welcome in.
Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Good morning. It is so exciting to have you here. Now, you do a lot of work, don't you, Mary? So tell us a little bit about what you have your hands in.
What I have my hands in right now is I'm co-writing a book with a former Plain Mennonite woman. And we're calling it Not So Plain and Simple because we're kind of talking about some of the differences and similarities between Amish and Mennonite culture. It's been very enlightening to just write like that.
Now, you grew up Amish, right? And you were in the Pennsylvania community, correct?
I was born in Pennsylvania. I lived in three different Amish settlements in Western Pennsylvania. And I also lived in two different Amish settlements in Wisconsin. So, I escaped in 2004 from an old order Amish community in Wisconsin that I was baptized into.
And for the listeners, what is that exactly? Is it more strict? Is it more conservative?
Oh dear. Okay. Well, let's begin. Okay. So with Amish, you have decentralized leadership. They were formed roughly in 1693 by a group of people that followed Jacob Ammon and Jacob Ammon's ideas. We split from the Mennonite church because partially we didn't agree with their shunning policy at that time. And even the baptism instructions that I received in the Old Order Amish Church in 2002, 2003, I think it was 2002 when I was baptized. Anyways, when they did the baptism instructions, we actually called it going after church. We didn't call it baptism class. And they used the Dordrecht, Holland, Articles of Confessions of Faith. Articles 16 and 17 tell you how to shun people. Well, first they tell you to shun people, and then they tell you how to shun people. That is still enforced in many Old Order Amish churches and many churches. However, comma, pause, I do want to give a disclaimer and talk about the fact that sometimes that the way that it is enforced can vary greatly depending on the type of Amish you are or even sometimes your family.
And you had described before that, like, within these Amish orders, that they're not the same. So you cannot compare one order to another order because they may not be following the same rules or whatever, correct?
That's right. That's called overgeneralizing, which often gets done by the general public because they don't understand the routinization of charisma. And they also don't understand that, because I've had people tell me, well, the Amish are not a C word. And I'm like, but do you understand how the brutalization of charisma works? Like, we're still here and we're still using the same doctrine. We're still applying that doctrine, even if it varies widely. We're still inspired by that. That is still our history. Can you really divest from that?
Yeah.
Because part of what also happens with the decentralized leadership is that you have different settlements, and within settlements, which is a different geographical location, you can have different types of Amish. And in the different types of Amish, you can even have different church districts. Typically, in most Amish churches that I know of, ministry gets together of that flavor of Amish twice a year, and they rewrite the rules. And then the church is supposed to vote. However, let me give you an example of how that church voting might go. Last fall, no, a year ago, this 2 years ago this fall, I think it was. Don't quote me on the year, but it was in the past two within the past 2 years. There was a bishop who decided to outlaw a certain type of dress fabric, and people voted against it, and his proposal, the proposal of the Ordnungsbrief, did not pass. And so the bishop disciplined the church members that voted against it. And
Wow.
while they were disciplined, they're not allowed to vote in church business. And then he put forth the proposal again, and the proposal passed.
Wow, that is so messed up.
So democratic, right?
So, how did this structure shape your early life and your upbringing? What did that look like growing up Amish? Because I
Man, you're
know.
asking loaded
Well, I
questions.
know what we see, depicted on television in books, okay? And we know from having spoken to you, me and T, that your experience is nothing like what it is that is depicted in books because they glamorize the Amish lifestyle. So I would like our listeners to know from you what your experience was actually like so they have a better idea of what that is.
Heather, the very first thing that comes to mind is being a school child, and I was in third or fourth grade, and I was walking home from school with my friend who was 1 grade up from me, so she was in fourth or fifth grade, and there was an English man, a dominant cultured man, who followed us in his car and tried to get us to get in his car.
And you were just a little girl. That is so atrocious.
Third and fourth grade, or fourth and fifth grade, we were children. We were children that dominant culture men saw as sexual objects. So that may be shocking to some people's nervous systems. Do you think?
But it's truth.
Yeah, it is truth.
Sadly, it's the way things go.
It's also indicative of, you mentioned the romanticized or glamorized viewpoint that you see in media. That is what I mean when I say being Amish is not just a religion, it's not just a culture, it's not just a way of life. While it is all of those things, it's also a business and it is an ethnocentric group. How do you think the business would proceed or could continue to exist if they didn't have the glamorized viewpoint of labor exploitation?
Ooh, that is so good. That is so good, Mary.
Because
She's
even would a church exist if it wasn't for the money that is made to help keep it a well-oiled wheel?
So we know from having spoken to you that, there was rampant abuse that you experienced. And I want to talk about that a little bit. We had spoken a little bit earlier before we got this podcast started, about some of the questions that come up when you share your experiences. So you want to talk a little bit about that with us as well?
Yeah, let's talk about this. Okay, first off, in dominant culture, there's a lot of times people will ask survivors of sexual violence what they were wearing. For me, it wasn't an outright question of what I was wearing. It was more insidious because it was like, oh, well, clearly you were dressed modestly. And I was. In my one picture that I have of me, it's an old picture. It's very poor quality. It was taken in July of 2003. You can definitely see that I was covered and I was dressed modestly and plainly. And so people didn't ask me outright, what was I wearing? Instead, they asked me, what was I wearing under the dress?
That is
What do
so
Amish women
egregious.
wear under the dress? And you know what? I spent many years thinking about that and processing that in therapy. And eventually, I made a whole video with the help of my friends over at Into Account, Our Stories Untold. Shout out to Jay and Stephanie because they're the ones that made this happen for me. And what I did is I actually took off the older Amish dress that I had on, which it was not in the style that we were allowed to wear. And everybody from that community knows damn well that is not an approved by the church's bishop's dress. However, it is approved by a different type of Amish church's bishop. So I digress. But I took it off, and underneath it, what I did is I kept a list for several years. I kept a list of all the things that people have called me, the names that people have called me, because I refuse to buy into the romanticized and glamorized version. If you want to talk to me about like high control groups, fine, great. I'm happy with that. I do find a lot of, I don't know, I have a lot of interest in high control groups and how they operate and the impacts of that. How does that impact us long term? But when we're talking about this and you realize that I'm saying that the Amish that I grew up in, all five of those communities are high control religious groups. When I tell you that, and your response is to wax and wane poetic about some butter or furniture, or tell me you're just looking around at your beautiful Amish furniture, like first off,
I'm talking about a
no.
use here, not furniture.
Like I'm not doing that. But the beautiful part is so I took all these words that people called me. And my friends helped me. I put body paint on me and I painted all those words on me. And then I made a video of me removing the dress. Well, you asked me what I was wearing under the dress. Now you know.
That is
And
incredible,
you know
though.
what? People don't ask me what Amish women wear under the dress no more.
And they shouldn't. Like, I mean, it is such an egregious, comment to make to somebody that is a survivor of abuse. Like, we had had this conversation earlier, but I was 8 years old. I was wearing little girl clothes, It's never about what she was wearing or wasn't wearing. It was always about the predator. And when we shift that question, we know that's putting the blame onto the victim instead of the predator. Like, and it's so egregious to put that onto the victim because you're just re-victimizing them over and over again.
And most of the time, Heather, whenever they do this, and we say when these things happened to us, we were 4, we were 8, we were 5, we weren't dressing ourselves.
No, we
Our
were not.
mothers were.
Yes, our parents were dressing us.
They were dressing us knowing what they were doing.
And not even just that, it was also the clothing that was approved by the group as a whole.
Which they failed to understand that those standards of godliness and holiness are set forth by the minister or the bishop of that congregation. And it's taught to the fathers because we know what the covenant means, regardless of high controlled religion or sect that you're in, that it goes from the, God, bishop, father, mother, and the children. So whatever that bishop said, he brought it to the men of the church, and the men of the church went to the women of the church, and the women of the church enforced those rules.
That's why when
Absolutely.
you go to a quilting, oh yes, ask me about the how much fun did you have at the quilting bees? Oh, you mean was it fun watching somebody getting called out and having a yardstick used to measure how long her dress was. Do you mean that was fun?
Wow, that's crazy.
Like,
Or
I
stick them
remember
in.
things. I remember things, but I don't remember the romanticized version of whatever you're talking about there.
Oh, same. When I look back on my childhood, just growing up in the cushion, it is not romanticized. I don't remember those good feeling things that everybody talks about. I don't remember that at all. I remember being 5 years old and thinking I was a rotten piece of trash and had to give my life to Jesus. That's what I remember. But I don't remember, like, there is no goodness when you're a little kid and you're being told that it your virginity, if you give it away, you're like a piece of chewed up bubble gum. You know, like, what the heck are we teaching people in these spaces?
Oh, do you want to hear our version of
Yes,
that?
I want to hear it. Please tell me.
Why buy the cow when you can have the milk for free?
Okay, Mary. So my dad actually told my husband that before he told him he needed to marry me. And that's why I got married at 16 years old.
Dear fucking, oh my
Yes,
God.
because we were engaging in premarital sex. So yes, that actually transfers past the Amish community into Christian communities as well. That's how bad
Exactly.
that crap is.
That is insidious. That is
Yes.
so awful. So,
He,
so awful.
yeah, that's what
Mary.
he sat my husband down and literally told him that, you can't have the cow without, or the milk without buying the whole cow. And I still look back on that, just crazy. It's absolutely crazy because this is my father, like, right? This is the person that should be protecting me and advocating for me. And all he was doing was advocating against me. Like, it's just crazy.
And in his own way, sexualizing you as a 15, 16-year-old girl.
Yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
when you look back now, it's just, it's cringe. It's just cringy when you think that your dad was, that's
Yeah.
how they thought.
It's cringy. It's disgusting. It's violating.
Right.
Like, it's
You
so many
know,
different
it's
things. I
dismissive.
had no agency,
I
and I
have a.
was a good Christian girl, so I wasn't going to say no. I was going to do what I was told to do. I was following the rules, So, yeah,
And of
I
course, everybody knows that you're having that kind of wedding because you can't wear everything that
Oh,
a
yeah.
good virgin wedding could possibly be.
Well, everybody thought I was pregnant. That's why I was getting married. Like, everybody just assumed that I was pregnant, and that's why we were getting married. And I wasn't. I wasn't pregnant when I got married. I didn't get pregnant until 6 months later because that was the next step. But yeah,
Exactly.
it's like, yeah, it's crazy.
I really, really, I feel like I have so many feelings about what you're describing. You know, I have a 17-year-old right now, and I just cannot fathom
No.
looking at my child in that way or that
Yeah.
manner. And the best part of confronting all of the trauma and the harmful ideology that we were taught means that we also get this opportunity to address it and to do better for our own children.
Absolutely.
But it
Absolutely.
doesn't mean that we didn't experience that harmful
No.
behavior and treatment.
And I'm like you, my kids, they're older. My youngest child is, 19 years old, but I would never tell my kids, I would never force them into a situation. I would never encourage them to do anything that they wouldn't even want to do, that would violate their body or their autonomy or their choices. And trauma, what I've been through, has taught me better to how to be a better parent. I'm not perfect. I still get stuff wrong, but at least I'm willing to listen to my children when they come to me with their complaints and they say, "Hey, mom, maybe we shouldn't be doing this because this is hurting me a little bit," And I can say, "Oh, okay, yeah, I can work on that." Whereas I had parents that I couldn't go to with anything, right? Like, I was always the problem, not them.
It kind of
So
goes
I
back
know,
into
looking at my children now, right? When they come to me about things, because their first part of their lives, they were raised in a high-controlled religion as well. When they told me that they needed to talk to me about something, I found it so uncomfortable the first time when it was about my behaviors as a
yeah.
parent. And the behaviors that I was showing were completely from my childhood and my indoctrinated ways. And I remember taking a deep breath, like flinching, like wanting to become defensive. And I said, I won't do this. That's what my parents always did. And I
Yep.
just kind of like looked at him and took a deep breath. And I said, it is okay. Call me out.
Yep.
Let's talk about it. Let's try to make sure we undo those things that have been so harmful that I have yet to unpack.
Yep.
And thank you.
Well, and
Because
I'm
we're healing, we're growing,
right.
and we're unlearning bad things that were taught to us and woven into who we are as people, okay? And that stuff doesn't just go away overnight. It takes time to unring and undo all that harm. So, for us to just be willing to be open to listen to our children is huge compared to where we came from. Because where we came from, that wasn't even an option, We were taught to forgive things that were unforgivable and act like those things didn't even happen, right? Like, no, my dad's not an abusive person. He's a good man of God, right? But
We'll just let
we're not
Jesus
doing that.
decide where he goes. But for us,
Yeah.
he's forgiven.
But we should really be so grateful we're suffering in this life and not the next life.
Mary.
Like, let's really go
Yes.
there. And furthermore, I want to point out to like really, you brought up a vital and crucial part of when you're parenting a post like exiting a high control group, shit comes up. Shit comes up.
Yes.
And when your kids have been given the safety to express themselves to you, it is up to you to take that information that they're giving you and respond in a way that continues to embody safety and a mutually beneficial relationship between
Absolutely.
you and your child. You can't do that if you're
Yes.
continuously defending your actions, even when those actions are actually harmful to your own child.
Yes, you
People
have to
wonder
take
why we
accountability.
have this epidemic of people who are disconnecting from their families of origin and from their parents, from DNA shared people. Well, part of it is because of the fact that you get people who say, I love my child, but I don't agree
Yes.
with the way they're living.
Yep.
And that, in and of itself, is a very, very judgmental statement.
Oh my gosh,
Almost as
so
if the
true.
parent thinks that they own their children and their children owe them. Their
Yes.
children owe them blind obedience like they are property, as
Yes.
if, like, children, and women by extension are just property to be passed around. And that's what we should accept.
Exactly. Fee, in your early experiences with faith, religion, and your culture, when did you start to feel and know that what was happening was not right? How did you get that knowledge? How did you understand that I need to do something? Where did you get that information from? Because in high-controlled religions, we don't have school teachers, social workers, police officers, people of the public that we could readily go to when we and just say something about, and then they have the information to say, oh my God, we need to do something. So when did you come about that awareness? And how?
There's a 2005 article written by Nadia Labia for a legal magazine called The Gentle People. I will send it to you. It was published in February 2005. And I'm gonna tell you this. One of my distant cousins that I knew that lived in the same settlement that I lived in. She's no longer with us. But I knew that her father was essaying her, and somebody reported him to law enforcement. And he tried to run away. They caught him with a suitcase. His name was Raymond Byler. He's from Ohio. And he was prosecuted. His wife is quoted in this article talking about me and my mother, and I think it's fucking rich. I think it's fucking rich that her goddamn husband raped her child, and then he made his things right in the church, and then he continued raping her child, and she did fucking nothing, and she has the audacity to talk about my mother's dirty house or my mother's house not being clean, and then to say that Mary inherited her tendency to talk out of turn. I think it's fucking rich.
Wow.
When that story went through the Amish community, that's when I was inspired to figure out how to and maybe. And then I saw a therapist. I saw a therapist from 2003, the summer of 2003. I saw a therapist from then until like it was like a year. I had intensive outpatient therapy. And during that period of time, I left the church. There were so many people who were in mental health positions and in social services positions who really tried to convince me to stay Amish. It was inconceivable and unbearable.
That's crazy that they were convincing you to stay Amish. Like, how in the heck were they, could they ethically be doing their jobs and trying to convince you to stay in that abusive environment? That is beyond me.
Because if I leave the church while I'm under their care, then the church will blame them, and then they will be blacklisted, and it will impact their money.
Oh, wow. So it was all about protecting themselves and self-preservation. So,
Yeah.
what did your escape from the Amish look like?
You know, Heather, that is a really good question. And I'm just going to say this. In my first book, Reflections and Memories of an Amish Misfit, I wrote about the escape. I think that the culture shock that came after when I escaped, and then simultaneously, going through trying to assimilate into a culture that looked at us as like objects and not even really people. It was very difficult. I don't know how I would have survived had I not had people who were on the outside. And some of those people were also non-practicing Amish, but a lot of those people were never Amish people. And in fact, the ones who made the biggest impact and the biggest positive impact on my life are atheists to this day. I had to
And if I can just
challenge.
say this, Mary, for a lot of us, it was total strangers.
Yeah.
That showed up.
And showed us love that the institutions or the organizations or the people that claim to have God did not ever show. And it was always the people where they told us not to look, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The ones that they said were awful sinners and headed to hell.
So when I escaped, I was also under pressure from the church to stop the counseling that I was getting, the counseling from an actual clinician that was actually qualified to treat PTSD.
Wow.
And she had diagnosed me as having chronic PTSD, and they wanted me to go to an old order Amish minister. Or deacon. I think it was a deacon and a minister. Anyways, they wanted me to go to them for counseling because apparently somebody who goes to an Amish school with an eighth grade education where we don't cover anything about mental health or
Wow.
psychology or even PTSD is totally qualified to provide therapy for that, apparently.
Absolutely not.
And
And
so
you
that.
cannot heal in the same places that broke you. So you cannot heal underneath a counselor or a therapist that is coming from the same institutionalized mindset that you are trying to escape from. That is such bullshit. What the hell?
And the abuser remains in the church, sits on the pew as a forgiven person. And you must face him every day of you the rest of your life.
Oh yeah.
And find forgiveness to accept that.
Oh yeah.
Now bump that.
Oh yeah. Well,
We
you know, I
just
also write
little
about that like when
read
you need to talk about read the
the
book, you want to hear about this forgiveness part. Oh dear.
Yes, because it's like my favorite part, because you're the one who taught me that I could stand up and not forgive.
Read it to us, please.
Read it.
Well, could
Okay,
these
let's take a
groups?
short break because Mary wants to take a break. So let's take a short break.
Okay. I think I'm ready to
Okay.
continue, because we were talking about patriarchal authority, and my thing that I was gonna talk about is that how would high control authoritarian groups continue to exist if they didn't exploit the labor of its members?
And they couldn't. They absolutely couldn't continue to
How?
thrive without exploitation, because the whole system, no matter what group you're a part of, they all thrive off of exploitation of some kind. You're exploiting the person's emotions. You're exploiting, their freedom of thought. You're exploiting their labor. Like, you're exploiting them
Their
in so many
finances.
different facets, like, for real.
You're also decreasing control, like they control the access to information.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that I really write, like I write about this, the reason when I want all of you to know that this pose is what happened in chapter five of this book, when I was on my knees in front of the church. I was
Now,
put in that pose
for
in
just
front
a
of the
second.
church.
I want to describe to the listeners what kind of pose this is. So, Mary, could you describe what this pose is that you're showing us right now? Because they're going to be hearing and not seeing.
You're sitting on your knees with your behind pretty much touching your heels on the floor, your hands folded in your lap. Your shoulders are supposed to be slumped appropriately, your head bowed in God holy submission as you repent. That is when you make your things right, because there's different levels of confession, but this is one of the making your things right of confession rituals that I personally experienced. And for me, every single Amish person who comes from the groups I come from, they all know that that one cop string, the cop is the covering on my head. Oh, I forgot that. I had a covering on my head and a cape on and an apron. Plain dress, solid color. Okay. What is it? It's a dark green, like a hunter green dress. Okay. Anyways, they all know that that one covering string is a sign of rebellion.
I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. Because
They
it was so out of place.
also know that right here, my hair is combed straight back and there's no holy part in the middle.
Oh, that is so cool that you put those little, things in there, though, so people would see and recognize it right off the bat. And you guys can see this image too on the cover of her book,
And
Amish Misfit. Or that's Jezebel's
Jezebel's
Justice.
Justice. Yeah,
Jezebel's
this is on
Justice.
Jezebel's Justice. And the other part of this is that my hair's dyed and you can
And you're
cry.
not allowed to do that. Is a strictly forbidden. That is too worldly, Mary. That
Well, you
is
know.
too worldly.
So
That
I
alone
take.
is enough to get you shunned.
Okay, but did you see the cover of this book and the bright red hair there?
Yes, I
I'm just
did.
saying. Look,
That's the
like I
first
have a
book that I
track
saw
record.
you, and I was like, I love this so much.
There's actually a part in this book, Jezebel's Justice, where I write about the holy part of the hair.
Oh, that's awesome.
And there's like a part in this book where I write about Amish race women, For the
Read
record,
your favorite. Read a part of your favorite. This way, the audience knows what Jezebel's justice is about.
should we read a piece that I call Jezebel? Have you read that,
Yes.
Jezebel?
Of course, you know I'm up for Jezebel every day.
Jezebel. I listened to the sermon, swinging my legs underneath the backless bench. The virtuous woman sounds like someone I should be like. Yet Jezebel is to whom I relate. My little girl's sacred, stiffly starched apron is no longer so stiff and neat. The wrinkles show. I am more like Jezebel than any virtuous and holy girl. And somehow today, I still fail to see how the road to hell was a wrinkled apron, and the road to heaven was a holy apron, stiffly starched and wrinkle-free.
Wow, that is so good. That is so good. I love that. And so powerful because the symbolism in that is just incredible. So, what if you had any type of, you're out of the Amish, you are really helping people out here. What kind of work are you doing to help people, now that you're out? And if you had any type of advice or words of encouragement for our listeners today, what would you have to say to them, Mary?
Well, I have a lot of words about that. Number one, your life is your own. You have to live with the consequences of the decisions you make. So nobody else gets to tell you how you have to live your life. As long as you're not committing crimes or harming other people, live your damn life.
The golden rule,
Yes.
right?
For people that come from groups that really, really, really worked hard at silence as a golden virtue to cover up the harm that transpired within the congregations. And for people who also experienced the control of their clothing, because I want to point out that while I used an apron as a symbol, that was a pinafore apron. That was a very specific type of Amish girls' church apron
Yeah.
before I was even 12 years old. With that being said, regardless of what type of clothing it was, like I know for certain groups, women weren't allowed to wear pants for a
Yeah.
long time. And for other groups, they wear their specific underwear. Whatever type of clothing control that there is. Think about this part, this piece, because I wrote this piece called The Voices. It is dedicated to Kay Rose, a former Plain Mennonite who is a dear friend of mine and has recently published her second book, Triumphant Survival. I am so proud of her. Dressing herself was also a journey, as it is with anyone who has had their clothing monitored by strict rules. Regardless of how many or how small the number of rules, these rules all accomplish the same thing. They teach women that they don't have the ability to determine what garb is appropriate for them to wear, and they must always wear clothing approved by the men in their lives. Thank you, Kay Rose, for sharing your life with us and boldly writing about your experiences. With that being said, the voices, there's a need for this. We heard the voices. It's so big. I hear their voices as they break, gasping for air as they ask me, how do I, and insert things here. I hear their cries for help. I hear them timidly and quietly asking me not to think less of them because they didn't know. I hear them awake at night, feeling alone and lost in this big world. I hear their unspoken message that they have never felt the safety of being able to express themselves. We hear you. Whether it's 6 weeks or 6 months or 6 years or 6 decades, it's your body and you get to choose the clothing you wear. This is not a rule book. This is the idea that you get to decide the appropriate actions for you in your journey as you navigate the English world. You control how much and how fast you navigate this new world. Your decisions matter. Your autonomy matters. You are capable. You get to decide.
Well, I guess we couldn't have ended on a more beautiful or powerful note than that, could we? Whew, you got us both in tears over here.
Part
Oh,
of my work is
so
also
true.
really empowering people. One of the big things when we formed the Misfit Amish is now officially filed for nonprofit status. I'm so very proud of that.
So fantastic.
But one of the big things that our core principles that we hold is operating from a victim empowerment stance. That means if I'm sitting in a whether it's a physical or a virtual space, and somebody is being disrespectful and silencing the survivor, the first part I'm going to do is call out that bad behavior. I'm not going to tolerate that in spaces I am in.
Yes. Victims' voices
100% with you.
always, they always come first.
And they are capable of making decisions. Just because somebody has not had the experience and the practice to make good decisions, or what they view as good decisions, doesn't mean that they're incapable. It's infantilizing that the people go around treating survivors as if they have to be told what to do and where to go and how to walk and how to talk. It's like the same thing. You're just trading one garb of oppression for another. It's just trading one kind of control for another. So when people take back their autonomy, one of the things that can happen is that sometimes you have a really big central nervous system response, and it really makes you feel like you're back there. But here's the thing. You have all that experience now. You have
Yes.
all this knowledge now. You have people who are willing to walk with you. You have people from many different ways and walks of life who are willing to walk with you and sit in the darkness through this thing.
Yes.
And they got your back.
Yes.
Mary, can I ask a question here? I know we're winding it down, but I'm really curious on the impact. How it has shaped your relationships today, your identity, your self-worth. What does that look like for you today versus what it looked like for you 20 years ago?
Felt like I was a piece of property 20 years ago. I felt like I was nothing. I felt like I could never be good enough. I felt like I was fucking alone in the world that I didn't understand. But here's the thing. That has been more than 20 years ago, as you mentioned. I've had many different experiences. I've visited over a dozen countries. I've gotten to see the Louvre in Paris. I've gotten to travel to places I never thought would be possible. I've been to Hungary and sat at where the footsteps go into the river from the Jewish people that were walked into the river. I've gotten to see things I never thought possible. And through it all, I've had some pretty fabulous trauma-informed therapists. And while I live with complex PTSD, part of what I have experienced is that for me, having more information means I can easily go down the path of pathologizing my trauma. I really try not to, but I digress. It's a work in progress.
Girl, we are all a work in progress.
But
But
having strong women like the three of
how?
us on this panel today is so empowering. And it's so important for the world to know that not only do we support, we stand behind, protect, and provide a safe place for
Yes.
wherever you're at on your journey.
Wherever you're at.
And
And I am
that's
honored
where I
that you're
was.
my friend.
That's where I was going. It's like one of the things that I've gotten the privilege of doing is choosing who gets to be in my life, choosing who gets to get part of my time,
Ooh, you are
and
so good.
choosing how to navigate my life. Everybody does not need to approve of me. I don't ask for your approval. I don't want your
I
pity. In
don't need,
fact,
nope.
I don't need you to tell me you're sorry that I experienced all those things. That's not why I talk about this. I talk about this because abuse exists in groups of people around the world.
Yes.
Personally, my experience was abuse within Amish communities. And that's why I talk about that, because I still have loved ones that remain inside of these communities. And I really just want there to be a better future for future generations of children in the world, regardless of what type of group they are born into. Because my sin was being born Amish. That's why people couldn't intervene. And part of what I had to learn to figure out who I was is, one, I didn't have a person, like I didn't have anywhere to go back to. People often think that we can just turn it off and it's as if we can go back to before the trauma transpired. When you experience
Yeah.
torture the way that I experienced it, there was no time that you remember prior to the trauma.
Yeah.
The trauma is interwoven in every part of your developmental path.
Yep.
You develop with trauma. It shapes every interaction you have, even when you don't consciously think about it, even when you deliberately try to deny it. So,
Yes.
what happened is I got the privilege of creating people, a community that literally, I get the privilege of being in spaces and having shared spaces like this where it just feels like a breath of fresh air after you were
Yes.
walking in the darkness. You
My
finally
goodness,
climbed up the
yes.
mountain and you're standing on top of Pikes Peak, okay? And I have stood on top of Pikes Peak. 14,100 feet elevation. Thank you very much.
Well, you
Let me add that to my
freaking
bucket list.
go, girl.
They have a train you can ride up to the top of Pikes Peak if you didn't know. So you don't have to drive up there no more, but they have a train.
Ooh, did you hear that, y'all? You can catch a train to the top of Pikes Peak. Well, we are so grateful to have had you here with us today, Mary, and to be able to
Yes.
engage in these really incredible conversations. And you have really, you're a badass woman. Like, I watched a video of you just a couple of days ago. You were like standing in front of a courthouse talking about childhood sexual abuse. And I'm sitting there thinking, God, I love badass women. Like, I just do, because you are one of them. So I am going to let all of our listeners know how they can find you. You are on multiple social media platforms. So I'm going to leave your links in the show notes so they can buy your books, they can watch your content, and follow along with the work that it is that you are doing. Go ahead, T.
And Mary, say something about the documentary that's out there on Peacock.
Yes, say something about your documentary too, real quick.
So, in my first book, which is an autobiography, it talks about trauma of all kinds. It talks about child abuse. It talks about systemic failure at so many levels. And I stopped writing when I escaped. I do tell you that the abuse was reported. But I don't really talk about what transpired after that very much, because that is like a fresh wound. But there is a documentary that you can watch that's called Sins of the Amish. It's on Peacock. You can see the four busloads of Amish people who showed up in court for a child rapist. Who said on the court record that he rapes a child. I think he guesstimated about 60 or 75 times on court record. But in the documentary, you can also see the stack of letters they wrote on behalf of perpetrators of child rape.
That is just egregious. And that is the sins of the Amish.
Yep.
And this is why Mary is a badass, isn't
I
it?
have been fighting patriarchy my whole life, okay?
And you're so damn good at it.
Look, like I didn't have a choice. It was survival. I had to get good at fighting it to survive.
And you have become a pro. And we are so dang grateful for you. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We love
And I
you.
am privileged to
Oh,
have been able to honor to interview you today and have you on our podcast. I'm glad that I can call you friend.
yes, we are very
Thank you
honored
so
to know
much
you. And it's
for.
really awesome knowing that we have this incredible community that reflects so many different people. Okay. I'm a Christian. You know, T is an atheist. You're an atheist, but you're ex-Amish. You know, we all come from different religious backgrounds, but we still can come together and have these meaningful conversations that are really helping change lives. So thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored. And you know, Heather, you told me to read you for filth if you mess up.
Okay, read me for filth. What did I do?
Okay, I just want to ask you this. Remember when I said it was an ethnocentric religion? Okay. So I personally refer to myself as non-practicing Amish. I don't practice the Amish way of life very much. I don't practice Amish theology, really, but I do practice some aspects of the Amish way of life. So I just say I'm like a non-practicing Amish person. Why? Because until you extract the genetic conditions I live with as a consequence of being born Amish, I can never be X, can I?
Ex-Amish. Okay. I am so sorry. I am so sorry. See, that makes sense because it's a lot like being a Jewish person. You can't ever be an ex-Jewish person. And I apologize for that. That does make sense.
The preceding podcast is solely owned by its host or hosts and is distributed by Big Media LLC. Copyright 2025, all rights reserved.